All right, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys are having an awesome holiday week. Lot to be grateful for this year. And I'm particularly grateful for two of our lead analysts here, Matt and Brendan, who have made our lives so much better this year. Now that they're on the team, helping us with our research, our writings, our preparation. So we decided, wait, why don't we bring these guys on the podcast today and have a little chat. So we decided to record a little roundtable with Matt and Brendan, Pizza Mine, myself, our producer TiVo,
who's super producer, getting
TiVo getting some reps in, getting his work around. but we're excited for you guys to check this one out. So happy Thanksgiving. So I think Brendan had kind of an interesting question last week that I wanted to talk about. Brendan, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, how much time do you think that FTX, Alameda, and Sam Bankman-Fried added to this bear market? Like, how much longer do you guys think that this bear market is going to be now that the entire FTX implosion happened?
Actually, I think this was right on time. As I've been traveling around the world, events are still sold out beyond capacity. And bear markets are basically marked by capitulation events. We need people to get forced out of their positions. And everyone believes in the future of crypto so much, no one was selling, even as prices were collapsing. So now I think with FTX, basically they're going to have to force sell all their assets. And the contagion that now that's spreading over to DCG and potentially Grayscale and who knows who else, Genesis, mm-hmm. Who knows who else is going to get forced out of their positions. That to me is that last leg down that we're experiencing today that is necessary for a bottom to form in a bear market. So I think it's right on time.
Yeah, and they say that trends are built on dead bodies. And what I see here with the explosion, I see a bomb just went off, right? FTX blowing up is the equivalent of, you know, a market nuke going off. So I think that your question of how much longer is this going to make the bear market is wrong. I think it's how much quicker does this make the bear market? I think that this was a ticking time bomb that was going to go off eventually. And the fact that it is out and all the leverage is getting expunged is making this whole bear market process go that much quicker. So I'm actually of the belief that this is a good thing that all this is blowing up. I mean, of course, it sucks that so many people have lost money in this. That, you know, I saw Multicoin Capital had something like $863 million locked up on there that was, publicly disclosed. There was so many of these really legit buttoned up funds that, you know, believed a lot of what Sam Bankman-Fried was saying. Kevin O'Leary as well was, you know, big Sam Bankman-Fried guy. But we all got stabbed in the back by FTX, and I think that it's going to make this whole thing actually just get over with a lot quicker.
So you're saying it's better that it happened now rather than in like 2, 3, 4 years from now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the same. I was of the same belief when Luna happened, right? Luna blew up at a $40 billion market cap, and I'm like, well, shit, that sucked, but at least it happened at a $40 billion market cap and not a $4 trillion market cap or whatever, right? And the fundamentals were not sound in the market. Kind of in the short term is a voting machine, but in the long term, it's a weighing machine. And what we clearly saw was that the market weighs fundamentals. And when the cost of capital or these interest rates and the cost of borrowing and leveraging gets so expensive when interest rates get higher, the tide comes out. And what we see is that people can't sustain with their piss poor fundamentals. Because money and credit is not free anymore, or 0.25%, right? Like it's, when interest rates are so high, a lot of shit starts to break when a lot of these companies were built and incubated in a low to zero interest rate environment. So I think also one of the biggest, craziest thing that's happening right now is the implosion of Genesis, who apparently has a $1 billion hole in their balance sheet because of the UST Terra Luna implosion. Apparently, I see that they've loaned back in May or something, they loaned $1 billion of Bitcoin, cold hard Bitcoin to the Luna Foundation Guard, right? LFG, right? So LFG gets $1 billion of Bitcoin to defend the peg of UST. And then guess what? They give Genesis $1 billion worth of UST, which should have been a stable coin. Guess what? UST goes to zero. Now they've got $1 billion or $1 billion USTs worth $0, and they've got a liability of $1 billion worth of Bitcoin. That's why they're going belly up. Pretty fucked up.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, I came into this debate thinking that I was going to have the contrarian opinion, and that would have been a lot more fun. But I don't think that's the case. I think I agree with you, Bryce. And, you know, we have been talking about this within our team for the last week, and I think there's credence to both sides of it. But at the end of the day, this collapse really is a capitulation catalyst. It's yeah. ripping the Band-Aid off. And so we've had these unsustainable models in the industry without us knowing it for quite a long time. So much so that a lot of people thought they were sustainable, you know, specifically with Alameda and FTX. And so for those to really show their true colors now, I think is very valuable. And there is a lot of pain associated with that, but better to have it happen now than down the road.
And here's one really important like meditation for the day or for the week. And it's the concept of making money is really cool, but keeping money is just as cool, right? And so it's like Multicoin Capital online, you know, $863 million, that was about 55% of their fund. So they might not even be able to continue operating. They might, who knows, but they were making so much money, globs of money in the bull market because of their early Solana foundation sort, or the early Solana tokens that they had, Helium tokens that they had, all these really key early entries. And you know, the GPs were making money hand over fist. And hey, you know, it's a crypto bull market. They're hedge fund managers. They're doing what they do, right? But they were unable to hedge that risk across cold storage, maybe because their operations got too big. Did they get complacent? Who knows? I mean, they trusted FTX. They trusted Sam Bankman-Fried. But keeping money safe is just as cool as making money. And people don't really remember that. But in a bear market, you know, this is, you know, in a, I guess what I'm trying to say is that in a bear market, you could make all the money you want and hedge. But if you're not in cold storage, what was it all for? So I don't know, just a couple thoughts there.
So let's pitch it this way. Do you think that this entire FTX situation created additional volatility that we wouldn't have seen otherwise? Like, let's just say that from top to bottom, the market was supposed to have dropped 80% on Bitcoin. And because of the FTX implosion, the market might now have seen an 80% move to an 85% drop. Like, do you think that there was an additional percentage in how much Bitcoin dropped from top to bottom because of the FTX situation? Or do you think that this was all factored in? And regardless of whether FTX imploded or not, the market was going to drop a certain amount of percent?
Yeah, I think when there's blowout on the market maker and lender level, we got big issues, right? Because there's no liquidity on the books. Like, everything in terms of, like, you know, a $2 million order in Bitcoin, you know, 3 weeks ago would have impacted the price X, $2 million order dollar now would impact 2X, right? There's half the amount of liquidity because Alameda Research is blown up and they were one of the biggest, you know, market makers. So they were, you know, on both sides of the book, making sure the spreads are tight. But you also have one of the biggest lenders, which is Genesis, that blew up. And so now there's serious liquidity concerns, plus interest rates from the Fed are, you know, at extremely high levels relative to where they've been over the past, you know, couple decades. So it's getting really, really tight. And all that to say that when liquidity is as light as it is, you have exaggerated moves. And so this was, you know, this was a barn burner for sure. Because at the end of the day, there was selling into empty order books that took us all the way down to 15K. Now, if this was, you know, panic selling because, you know, whatever, Gate.io or Liquid or KuCoin or whatever, one of these smaller but still kind of legit exchanges goes down, well, they might be selling into very padded order books because a lot of, you know, market makers are still there to facilitate that trade. But when they're not there, it just goes to zero. So a lot of coins are still kind of on the cusp here. But is 15K zero for Bitcoin? No, obviously it could have gone a lot lower. But yeah, this was a bad one.
You know, the old question is, you know, is life imitating art or is art imitating life? Or in both cases, it may be true. We had, you know, friends on our digital currency summit that were predicting, you know, 13,000 for Bitcoin almost a year ago when we were expecting it to go to 100,000 still. And at that time, we're saying these models are crazy. But they're looking at the paint on the technical saying, yeah, this is where, you know, we're looking for it to go. And certain events in life just happen to play out to make this actually happen, which is crazy enough to think about. So how does it really work? Who knows? But Bryce, you're absolutely right about when the market makers are pulling their liquidity, that's when we're going to see things really slip even further. So even as we sit at the low 1600s right now, 13 is absolutely within. Yeah, 16,000. 13,000 is absolutely within range because there's really not a lot left to backstop it at this point. And any money that's still on the sideline already knows that. Why are they going to jump in and pay a premium now?
Yeah, I guess my question is, like, how uninvestable does this make crypto for how long? Because, like, even though we have such a quick flush out of a lot of leverage, you know, kind of to the exact counterpoint of what I was talking about earlier, maybe, you know, institutions look at this and say, well, man, like, until these guys get their shit buttoned up, we don't want anything to do with them. So to that point, you know, Brendan, maybe it could make the bear market a little longer because there's, you know, the legitimacy that we've been building up for the past few years has been, you know, kind of crushed. But I think that this was one pocket of legitimacy that blew up, that exploded. But there's other pockets of legitimacy and there's other things that are successful and still moving, right? Visa and MasterCard are still here. Fidelity's still building their crypto exchange. Like, a lot of people are still here and not packing it up and packing it in. A lot of smart investors still here that, you know, might have to write off their FTX losses to zero. But, you know, there's still going to be a lot of opportunity for people to come in and say, hey, look at all this opportunity. I mean, if I was a market maker in the traditional financial world, and I didn't have any crypto exposure, but I had been waiting for the perfect opportunity to deploy capital with some market neutral sort of like strategies to you know, pad some order books and, you know, really dive in and make some pretty, you know, what's it called? Like, you know, uncorrelated yield. Now's the fucking time, right? Like, because there's not a lot of players right now. So if you're a big money sort of, you know, sophisticated cat, now's the time. The problem is not a lot of capital out there right now just laying around.
Yeah, and that's the question, right? That's the question that everyone's asking is this going to affect institutional money? Is this going to affect institutional investors? And everyone seems to think so, but there's still all these big players like JP Morgan, Fidelity, MasterCard, Visa, BNY, Mellon, like the list goes on, and they're all incredibly active. In fact, a lot of us would say that they're more active now after everything has transpired and they have no plans to slow this stuff down. And so if them as the leaders in the financial industry are not scared of what's happening and they're continuing to move forward with their progression, then who is? Because they are the ones that are leading the industry. They lead by example. And they are the market movers. They are the market makers of traditional finance. And so it kind of asks the question of, if everyone's saying that this is going to affect institutional investors, who is it really going to affect? Because clearly it's not affecting JP Morgan or Fidelity or Visa or MasterCard or BNY Mellon. Like, you know, who are these people that everyone's saying is going to get affected so much by this entire situation? And, you know, there are people who are going to get affected. That's not out of the question, right? Clearly this hurt a lot of people and it hurt American investors, but the largest players in the space still seem like they're on a normal path, a normal trajectory. to integrate this stuff in the coming years?
You know, I think the other important thing to consider here is the idea that a lot of the projects that have been fleshed out were probably going to fail anyway. They were either depending on, you know, large amounts of venture capital that was unsustainable, or their business model was, you know, just printing their own tokens nonstop, and that's unsustainable. And so we see this flush out of the bad stuff, and what's left are these projects that have real revenue. I mean, you look at things like the real world asset sector, and you know, all the platforms that are either lending to existing businesses that don't have, you know, access to business loans, or they're collateralizing real world assets to, you know, lend against those, or even group invest or crowdfund invest into, you know, real hard assets. Those are the kind of projects that now have the chance to come up on stage because they're not being drowned out with all the noise. And so the ones that are left are the ones that will have real revenue. And those are exactly the kind of projects that venture capital wants to invest in, that outside investors with deep pockets want exposure to. What it is, you know, kind of a mirror image of is the dot-com bust and the ensuing 20 years that we saw over the last 20 years of, you know, companies like everything from eBay and MySpace that maybe we don't use as much anymore to the juggernauts of Amazon and Netflix and so on and so forth. Those projects are being developed today, and we probably won't see who the real leaders are for 5 to 10 years, but this reset has given everyone that's working on something legitimate the chance to actually get exposure to investors and not have to pay as much for marketing, because they don't have to compete with Shiba, Flocky, Elon Gate, you know, whatever, like all these other things that had massive marketing budgets because it was all Ponzi-nomics. And yeah. So again, I do think that it was a big capitulation event, but it was necessary. This is something that we've needed. We've needed this flush out for a long time.
We totally need this flush out, and it's a huge market reset. And hey, we just got to stay on our toes, right? Got to be nimble. Got to go both ways because the market's volatile. With that being said, I mean, boys, thanks for joining.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.